Zoom, and Carla, please call the next three.
Next three are Amira Streeter, Jeff Bachrock, and Joe Courtright, and they'll be followed by 40, Brian Wilson, 42, Steph Condor, and 43, Lucas Grabowski.
Okay. She's coming. Okay. Okay, Jeff, why don't you take it away?
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. I am Jeff Bachrock. I'm a member of the Portland Planning Sustainability Commission. And just because if it's some relevance, I will mention I also served 9 years on the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of Portland, now Home Forward. And briefly, I was as moved as anyone listening to the eloquent testimony today, articulating what the problem is we're all dealing with, the affordable housing crisis and the problems it creates for the citizens of Portland. The Planning Sustainability Commission concluded that the IZ program, as it's before you today, is not quite there as an effective solution to address the problem. The commissioners were persuaded we need IZ. I think many of us on the commission, myself personally, have been working for these kinds of affordable housing solutions to be implemented. And so I just want to give you a couple of the concerns the commissioners raised, and they should be kept in mind, as obviously we're going to go forward as a city with IZ. And I think we've already heard, even if you implement it now, there's still going to be some more work, some more questions to be answered. And that was really the basis for the Planning Commission's concerns, or certainly my particular concern, that we raised a lot of questions that were not answered at our hearings. We asked for information that there simply wasn't enough time. We're still not even sure if the information exists. A couple of key takeaways, again, as you go forward with this program, there is no clear template that Portland is following. Yes, many cities have IZ programs, but we asked repeatedly, and I think it's become apparent, we're breaking new ground here in the way we're crafting IZ, which is great, but keep in mind, we're not following a path others have trod. We're trying to create our own. This is a complicated regulatory program. Simple solutions aren't going to work. We need to carefully calibrate it and make it work. Couple of thoughts going forward, and Commissioner Fish, you raised some concerns going forward that we had at the Planning Commission. One, there is no benchmarking for what we're trying to achieve, what will demonstrate to the city that we're successful or not successful, so we need these sort of benchmarks. We still don't know the costs involved to implement an IZ program.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Let me be clear. What I said was, from those who have concerns that, who embrace the concept but have concerns that it may not deliver, what I asked was, what are the indicators that we should be watching? When will we know? And then how should we monitor that? And we do that with all of our programs because we're constantly pruning and fine-tuning. And one thing I'm concerned about is there's so many projects in the pipeline beating the February deadline that it may be years before we actually get any good data. But perhaps this is something that the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Council can take up. What are the things we need to watch to make sure that this policy is delivering on the promise that is driving it? And that's a question that I have, and I want to know what we should be watching in terms of. Now, obviously, if all of a sudden on the east side everything is coming in under 20 units, well, that's an indicator that people are trying to get around the 20-unit floor. But I'm looking for a more robust set of indicators that we can track and then to know when we have to come back and evaluate its success.
Quick answer. I would encourage, as we design a program for setting benchmarks for evaluating, that the Planning Sustainability Commission as well as Planning and BDS be equal partners with the Housing Bureau in designing the benchmarks, in looking out for these indicators, and making a program that's going to work. Because both legally and I think from a policy standpoint, inclusionary zoning started as a land use program. And I think you need that balance between housing and planning as you set your benchmarks, as you try to figure out how to fine-tune this program to achieve the goals we are all trying to achieve. And so I hope there'll be an opportunity for that sort of inter-bureau analysis and collaboration to make this work going forward.
All right.
For the record, Joe Courtwright, I'm an economist. I run City Observatory, which is a think tank on urban policy. We do a lot of research on housing, housing affordability policies around the country. I want to address one key issue, which is you have been told that inclusionary zoning is a well-developed policy and that Portland is following the template of other cities. Dr. Bates, Dr. Galster, and others have said that there's this body of research that shows that this does not have adverse effects. But they are eliding the meaning of the word inclusionary zoning. The policy that you have before you today is materially much more different and much more burdensome than inclusionary zoning in other cities. Other cities do not apply it citywide. They have lower inclusion rates, typically on the order of 10%, and it's typically voluntary. Even New York City's vaunted, quote-unquote, mandatory inclusionary zoning program only applies to upzones, where the developer is asking for more density than allowed in the plan. In Chicago, that program is also voluntary. It only applies where the city has money in a deal or the developer is asking for upzones. As a result, in large cities across the country, there is exactly one city that has produced more than 100 units of inclusionary zoning, new units, over the years that its program has been in operation. So this is a program as applied in other cities that is so small that it has no impact on the problems that are very real that people in Portland face. And that, not surprisingly, that when you look at the studies that are done of these trivially small programs, they don't seem to have an impact on the housing market. So this is a strategy that is both ineffectual and, as likely to be applied in Portland, will be counterproductive because developers have options and investors have options. And if the profit isn't high enough, they will go somewhere else. And when less housing is built in Portland, all of our rent and housing affordability problems will get worse. We do not have an affordability crisis because developers suddenly got greedier. We are overwhelmed by the demand for urban living in great places like Portland, and that will not be resolved until you build more supply. This will make that problem worse.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hello, my name is Amira Streeter. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Director for the Urban League of Portland. The Urban League is one of the oldest African-American service, civil rights, and advocacy organizations in the area, and we are also part of the Inclusionary Zoning Coalition. I just want to say that it is simply not enough to just supply affordable housing. I believe that this is a very well-calibrated IZ program, and coming from Montgomery County, where inclusionary zoning is a beacon of diversity and improvement into the county, I highly encourage you to take upon Commissioner Saltzman's plan and the Portland Housing Bureau's plan that is put before you. Historically, low-cost and multifamily housing has been banned because of NIMBY doctrine and has greatly displaced people of color, particularly Black communities and families. One study showed that from 2000 to 2013, white incomes increased from $55,000 to $60,000, while Black incomes decreased from $35,000 to $30,000. There is not one single neighborhood in the city where the average African-American can afford a two-bedroom apartment, and this is a tool to get that to happen. Also, you need to have rent stabilization and just cause evictions. Many of our folks are terrified of being put out on the street, and Black people are the highest community that are homeless right now. And speaking from a personal perspective, I feel insecure in being in an apartment right now where I can afford, but because there are very few limited options to me and many of my colleagues, I am nervous of if for some reason I can't be in the place I am now, where am I going to go? And that's the question that I want all of you to think about when you're making a decision today, is where are the people going to go?
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, next. Actually, I want to get a show of hands. How many people still wish to testify? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to have to go to 1 minute because we have to adjourn by 12:30. And I'm also going to announce at this time that we're going to set over till tomorrow at 11 a.m., time certain, the votes on the amendments. So we're going to conclude our oral testimony today. We will take written testimony up until 11 a.m. tomorrow. And so sorry about that, but we have to go to 1 minute. So call the next three, please.
are Brian Wilson, Steph Condor, and Lucas Grzybowski, and they'll be followed by 44, 45, 46, Doug Klotz, Tim O'Brien, and Jamal Green.
Okay, Brian, take it away.
Well, commissioners, it's really great to see you all. For the record, my name is Brian Wilson, and I am a longtime community advocate and housing affordability advocate, and having done a number of years on the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, too. So I know a little bit of what I speak. I'm also a developer of multifamily housing. I have built affordable housing, and I know how difficult it is to get it out of the ground. I wanted to appear before you today to pledge my support for helping you develop the most comprehensive and workable IZ program that you can. And I will submit additional written testimony to tell you how I think we might go about that as a team. Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am?
Do I get his 30 seconds?
No,
just
no,
kidding.
No.
Hi, I'm Steph Condor. I'm the Director of Real Estate Development at Central City Concern. CCC has been actively working in the community for 40 years, helping people experiencing homelessness find stable housing and engage in meaningful life change and reconnection with the larger Portland community. I want to say that we support the inclusionary zoning proposed by Commissioner Saltzman, so we appreciate very much that you've put this together. We feel that it's very comprehensive and fair. I also wanted to note that based on the bond that just went through, we recognize that that'll probably support about 1,500 more units of housing on the market for affordable housing. Just note that this inclusionary zoning, there's about 22,000 units in a stage of construction or permitting right now. And if you were to put this inclusionary zoning, about 15 to 20% of those units would be about 3,500 units more of affordable housing, so much more than your bond. We very much support this.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both.
Sir, Lucas Grzybowski, we'll go Doug Klotz, Tim O'Brien, and Jamal Green. Kurt Schultz.
Okay, I think we got three here.
All right. Hi, Doug Klotz. I live in the Richmond neighborhood. Inclusionary housing is an important part of a complete housing strategy for Portland. We need this proposal. We also need to make sure it does not slow down the production of all multifamily units, especially out in the mixed-use zones. I hope that the incentives and requirements in the current proposal are well balanced, or that we will get there. One key component is the removal of parking requirements for all units in mixed-use zones. One of the slides in the previous presentation showed how the addition of the removal of parking requirements brings the RLB back up to where it's in par with the market rates. So need to have include that, yeah, the removal of parking requirements. I'm also concerned that the IH requirements will stop some development that we've currently been getting out on Division Street and Hawthorne of a 20-unit buildings on a 50 by 100-foot lot. So this is not getting around the requirements. This is you have a small lot. And it's unlikely, I think, that voluntary IH will be done on such a small lot because of the administrative costs. So I would say then that we won't get the 20 units now because the FAR is going to drop from effectively 3.5 down to 2.5. So I'm advocating for raise the FAR on these small lots just so we'll get those 19 units that we were getting now instead of having cut down to 14.
Thank you. Sir.
Hello, Tim O'Brien, lifetime Portland resident, new development company, started in 2013, so I'm building multifamily housing. I do support IZ and the notion of it. I've actually supported low-income housing for in many different ways over my 20 years in real estate, including the last bond measure that just got passed. Saying that, I want to make sure we get it right, because if we don't get it right, as some of my developer cohorts have shared with you, it's the 80-90% of people that are paying, you know, that don't qualify, that are going to have to pay the high rent. So we want to help you get that right. I think also, most importantly, I'm just kind of cutting this short, kind of to Commissioner Fish's question about, you know, what do we need to do to monitor this if we pass it and it doesn't work? What are the leading indicators? Some thoughts I had in that regard. I think in your own permit and land use department, I would look for projects that are coming through the door that actually include inclusionary housing and look at those. That's a clear leading indicator. I think the other component that you could look at that would be even sooner than that would be to actually work with some of the architect firms that build a lot of multifamily housing. Actually, Kurt is a member of Sarah Architects that you're about to hear from, and those guys are going to see it first. You know, are we actually getting money spent and designing projects that would include inclusionary housing? So
thank you.
That's all I have.
Go ahead. All right. Thank you very much. I'm Kurt Schultz, a principal at Sarah Architects. We've been in business in Portland for 45 years, and we have 150 employees who desperately need affordable housing. We definitely support inclusionary housing as long as it doesn't discourage production, because then no one here in the room gets what we're looking for. And since we are kind of the tip of the iceberg, I wanted to share with you some of the things we're seeing in the market right now. We have typically designed and built about over 500 units per year, probably over the last 6 years. And we typically have a one-year backlog of 500 to 1,000 units, all within the city of Portland limits. For 2017 past projects that are currently vested, we have a total of zero new units on the boards that will come post post-vesting. And this is a significant concern for us. These are 500 units a year that don't look like they're going to get delivered to market. And I know there's a lot of talk about this vast number of units that are coming online now. We're designing many of those, and I can tell you a vast majority of those projects are not going to get built. A lot of those entitlements are just being put on the shelf, and the market is changing. Construction costs are rising, and many of those projects will not move forward. We support inclusionary housing. We want to see this happen, but housing that does not get built is not going to create more affordable units. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all.
Next are Gerald Deloney, Shannon Milliman, and Yasika Ale. Mr. Deloney left. Let's go, yeah. Diane Lim. And after them is Madeline Kovacs, Brent Perry, and Wayne Wigness.
We'll start with you.
Hello, I'm Shannon Milliman. I am a homeowner in the Lentz neighborhood for 2.5 years. My family, with 5 children, and my husband and myself, have immediately had an advantage of $300 less in our monthly payment. And strategically long-term, we are becoming much greater examples of contributing members of society and teaching those principles to our children. Stewardship, self-reliance, and family are important values. In our home, we plant a garden, and we have urban chickens, and we have a dog that I make sure my son walks, because teaching chores is a part of raising a family. Tonight, I attend a Lentz Neighborhood Association meeting advocating for a library in Lentz. After we tuck our kids into bed, we're working on developing some personal goals. My husband is a music recording artist and trying to start a business in our garage. And I'm working on writing a book. In the daytime, I work for the City of Portland and BES. And in the last 2 years when we've had this home, I've progressed and learned how to be a manager and made a career shift and have found stability because of this.
Thank you.
Ma'am. Hello, my name is Jessica Arevalo, and I am here to urge you to support the inclusionary housing policy. This proposal will work to increase housing affordability while also reducing racial and economic segregation. I have faced homelessness in the past with my children, and I was very fortunate to be able to find a job that pays a living wage. And thanks to that, and also to Pratt Ground and the opportunity to buy an affordable, permanently affordable home, I have been able to provide for my children a stable home. And so I want to urge you to please support IC so that other families such as myself will also have that opportunity to provide a stable home for their families.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane?
Good morning, almost afternoon. Diane Lin, Executive Director of Prog Ground. Very proud to be in the presence of these two amazing women who are raising their children and having thriving in two Prog Ground homes. We're here to tell you emphatically that it's time to pass this inclusionary zoning policy. These women can represent so many more families that could be served in the way they have around the city. We've worked very hard, as all of you know, to remove the ban. We've worked in coalition with a tremendous number of agencies. We appreciate your leadership in taking this forward. We know this isn't easy. And I do have colleagues all around the country who are working in cities, in jurisdictions that are applying this kind of policy. We know it needs to be fact-checked and course-corrected along the way, but now's the time. It's critically important that we plant these seeds immediately. We've lost a lot of ground in Portland over the last 10 years in my hometown, and families like these two women represent today can be multiplied many times over if you move forward on this policy as soon as possible.
Thank you all.
Thank you very, very much.
Are Madeline Kovacs, Brent Perry, and Wayne Wigness, Christy White, Katrina Holland, Evan Wellington, Jessica Rojas.
Must get to the very end. Okay, go ahead, Madeline, just give us your name and you have 1 minute.
A minute?
Sorry. Yeah,
one That's minute. Cool. My name is Madeline Kovacs. I'm the coordinator for the Portland for Everyone Coalition. I'm going to read just a couple things here. First, increasing supply of housing to address Portland's current crisis is important, but we need to be equally concerned with who we are building it for and where it's located. I'm here to speak today to two of Portland for Everyone's five goals. One, prioritizing housing for historically and currently underserved populations, and two, creating and maintaining economically diverse neighborhoods. Skipping toward the bottom now. Yes, the inclusion rate we're talking about today is higher, but so are the proposed offsets. Inclusionary housing has a 40-year track record in over 500 jurisdictions. No other jurisdiction has held developer profits completely harmless when enacting this policy. Portland would be the first. The policy contains the full suite of tools that can be employed to achieve successful development regimes, including direct subsidies, density bonuses, tax abatements, and hopefully further reduce parking requirements. I'll leave it there. I'll submit written testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir?
Good afternoon. Brent Perry, president of Bremmett Construction. And as a contractor in Portland, we are responsible for the family wage jobs of over 100 people. So it's very, very important that you guys get this right. We certainly support the mixed income communities, but let's get it right. Approximately 50% of our volume is market rate apartments. And so if we don't get this right and that goes away, you'll see 50 people become part of the problem, not part of the solution. So again, very supportive of it, but let's make sure that we get it right so that it doesn't, as Kurt Schultz said, send it to zero. Zero is still zero. So let's make sure that we get that right. And then also to understand that we collectively, the city, everybody that's doing this, really what we are doing is we need to attract outside investment because that is where the money comes from to do this. Without that outside money, they're going to go somewhere else. We will go to zero.
Thank you.
My name is Jessica Rojas, and I grew up in Northeast Portland since 78. I currently work as a Neighborhoods Program Manager for the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, and I serve neighborhoods I cannot be a part of anymore. This morning I drove from Vancouver, Washington, because that's where I laid my head at last night. And myself and many of my peers, we're finding ourselves being really crafty in our ability to adjust. So I'm going to look at the development sector and ask them to adjust to the needs of our region. Inclusionary zoning was vetted with a lot of input from them already at the state level. And so now it's the city's job to get implemented here locally. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Hi, I say Christy White and Stephen Lang. And if there's anybody else who did not hear their name called.
Okay, Christy, we'll start with you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you, Christy White. There's been a lot of good and smart people testifying in front of you, and I think maybe we should just assume that everybody's a little bit right. And so the question is, what are they right or wrong about? Because this program is critically important to the success of housing people in the city of Portland over the long term. So I'm just going to answer really quickly what I think some of the indicators should be as to whether the program's working. First, we need to start measuring whether or not we're building to the anticipated density in the central city and outside the central city, or whether people are coming in and trying to build under 20 units in order to avoid the program. What units are being delivered, 80%, 60%, which offsets are working better under which MFI program, and what happened to land values? Are the offsets working? I'd also ask you to consider the offered amendment to use the central city master plan process and the DA for an equivalency test. The units built under DAs or central city master plans, because they cover larger property area, might be able to be more flexible. And if they equally or better meet IZ, they should be credited towards IZ. Lastly, I'd like to share in closing that I don't know the developers that many people in this room are talking about, but these are good people, and the majority of people in this town want to make this work. Let's make no question about that. And working with them and not against them, with the people who are building these units, will make this program more successful. Thank you.
Sir? I'm Steve Lang. I've been fortunate enough to be able to afford rent in Portland for the past 12 years, although I was close to being homeless at one point. And there was a housing development in the South Waterfront a few years ago where they reserved 20 units for veterans, lower income or whatever, however they describe it. I was glad I didn't go down to try to sign up, because the line was out the door, down the block, and around the corner, camped out on the sidewalk for 3 days waiting. That was the demand just from the small sub-community of veterans. So that's the kind of demand there is for this kind of housing here. But I was kind of struck by the discussion outlining this project, that there's a buyout feature. And I don't see how the units will ever be built, because it seems to me that the developers could use the buyout feature every time, and none of the targeted units would ever be realized.
Thank you. Sir.
Hello, Evan Wellington, Secretary of Portland Tenants United. I'll get right to it. IZ is a good thing, but this is the fourth supply-side resolution that we've been to City Hall for recently. This is not helping those who are facing profound risks of displacement today. So just a few reminders. I would like you to consider each and every senior or person with disability living in Portland who is on a fixed income. I would like you to consider each and every college student who is increasingly finding it hard to both fulfill their obligations to earn college credits and allocate income to rent and food costs that are increasingly inflated. And consider each and every family living in units they are too afraid to file maintenance requests for fear of finding a no-cause eviction on their door. Each and every minority that faces the added component of discrimination if they are displaced. And this in light of the fact that the Portland Housing Bureau itself released a report as recently as 2015, which found that whites were given preferential treatment as prospective renters 48% of the time. By the way, Saltzman, we need to make sure those equity studies are done yearly. What better time? Please consider these things and keep in mind the fact that they need to be thrown into the considerations where it comes to adjustments to this policy. And in the meantime, in waiting for this policy, we need rent protection, we need a moratorium on no-cause evictions, and we need a rent freeze.
Okay.
Please help us keep Portland housed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. Anybody else? Okay, yeah, come on up.
Allison Reynolds with Perkins Coie. I just wanted to
give your name and the microphone.
Yes, so, yeah. Allison Reynolds with Perkins Coie. And I just wanted to ask the council to leave the record open for written testimony for a week after this. I think there have been some substantive questions that were asked by members of the council, and at least the folks that I work for would like an opportunity to respond to those in writing.
Let's be clear. We're not voting until next Wednesday,
sure.
So the record does stay open until the council actually casts the final vote.
Fantastic. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Allison.
Okay, thank you. Did any of my colleagues want to ask staff questions at this point, or do you want to just wait till tomorrow at 11 a.m.?
I think we can wait till tomorrow. Dan, the one thing I do want to ask tomorrow, and maybe it'll be a friendly amendment, but I'm going to ask the Housing Bureau to consider this, to give us a preview of how we will be monitoring the implementation of this policy, and when we can expect the first substantive report. And I think to the extent even the strong supporters of the program have come forward and said, here are some of the indicators we need to look at. I want to make sure that the Housing Bureau has the resources they need, that the Bureau of Development Services has the resources they need, and that we work in collaboration with the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to track the effect of this new policy. And that at the earliest possible stage, if there are if there's a need for us to reconvene and rethink any part of it the way we did with the multi-program, I want to make sure that that's baked into our policy.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. President, I did want to see to hear staff's reaction to Locus's first proposed amendment about collapsing the two PHP proposed central city zone inclusionary rate and incentive packages into one.
Okay. I have a thought because I have to leave, Steve. Why don't you move that as an amendment? I'll second it so it's on the table. That gives staff a chance tomorrow to come give us a presentation.
Right.
I don't fully understand it, but I want to give you a chance for it to be heard tomorrow.
So moved.
Second.
Thanks. Okay, great. So,
previously, we indicated that the record would be closed tomorrow and then discussion would happen, but Commissioner Fish just indicated that the record would stay open. It is a legislative amendment, so you can leave the record open until the final vote.
I would urge us to keep it open until the vote.
But you don't have to.
Okay. So we can leave it open until the final vote?
Yes, but amendments should be voted on 5 days before
we'll
the
vote
final
on.
Yeah, the minutes are going to be voted on tomorrow. Okay. So, okay, the record, written record is still open until the 21st. And we will vote on amendments that have been moved and seconded today. We will vote on those tomorrow. We'll have, I believe, the full council here. And thank you, everybody, for being here today. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Dan. Hold on.
Oh, we're adjourned.
Steve.
Yeah.
Would you, when you go a little deeper on that, would you let me know what you think?
Yeah.
Because I think I get it, but it's I'm not going to
yeah.
have time
I'm,
to look
I'm not totally sure I do either, but I meant to follow up last week.
Dan
but yeah, let's
weigh in. I think
okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate you putting it on the table, because it did seem like the one amendment that was at least worth debating.
Yeah, the ramp-up step, less so.
Thank you.